DAL Files, the ultimate Cowboys podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us now from 105.3 Dallas, it is RJ Choppy. You can follow him on Twitter at RJ Choppy. And boy, RJ, when you look at what is going on with the Dallas Cowboys, this game over the Niners seems to be how they wrote it up. Dak Prescott was fantastic. Again, no interceptions, two touchdowns, and Ezekiel Elliott looked every bit as good as advertised. Cowboys offense is starting to round into form, isn't it?
Yeah, outside of the early going where they fell down 14-0, they stuck to their game plan, and they executed their game plan, especially after the first quarter. Really the last 2.5 quarters, they played phenomenal football. And, with Dak Prescott, it's still going to be a work in progress because, let's not forget, he was the backup. He was getting backup reps in minicamp and OTAs, and backup reps for the first, 6 days of training camp, 4 days of training camp. So it was it was definitely slower going in the beginning than it is now, but it seems to be moving at a pretty good pace right now. They seem to be clicking.
In certain regards, when you look at a win, and you're right, you fall down, you fall behind, that's not a great thing. But when you have a young team like this and you see them fall behind, keep their cool, especially at these positions, and find a way to claw back, that's got to be pretty enticing, maybe even more so than something where it was an easy win where they cruised all the way through.
For sure, especially when you have young players, like you said, the young quarterback, young running back. The poise that Dak Prescott has, it speaks volumes. He was a really good player at Mississippi State. I loved watching him in college. I thought he was going to be a good pro. I didn't know it was going to be like this quick, but I knew that the guy had something to offer at the next level, something far greater than, a fourth-round draft pick. But what they've got going on right now with young kids at key positions on offense, and the main thing about that, when you have a fourth-round pick as quarterback, and even though they do have a starting quarterback in Romo who's got a ton of money, but this is the blueprint in the NFL. Get a mid-round hit on a mid-round pick at quarterback, save money at that position, build your roster up elsewhere.
That does seem to be really the perfect solution, because when you realize how much money these guys get now at the quarterback position, Brock Osweiler over in Houston is the perfect example. A handful of starts for Denver, it goes and parlays that into a $72 million deal. And truthfully, even Houston understood that they really didn't know what they had for their $72 million. That's a big-time gamble. So when you can land someone like Prescott where you figure, at worst, he's going to be an adequate player for you for a while, it gives you an opportunity to build up the rest of the team. Some of that pays off in this case, too, because in Prescott, playing against the 49ers, he doesn't have Dez Bryant right now. You've had an opportunity to see Cole Beasley kind of take advantage of that opportunity. The fact that they were able to keep everything going in the passing game so efficiently and effectively without Dez Bryant, I think, is telling. And another one of those signs that this is a team that's starting to build for something. You know that Jason Witten leads the team in this game on receptions, as you would expect him to. The tight end makes for a great security blanket for a young quarterback. But he's not really afraid of spreading that ball around. And it seems from week to week, Prescott is doing it more and more.
Yeah, he is. And last year, they didn't have Dez Bryant for a large part of the season, and it showed. And this year, Dak was able to get the ball to Bryce Butler, to Terrence Williams, to Beasley and Witten. And obviously, Elliott running the ball for about 140 yards didn't hurt. But, last year, they just weren't able to do this. When Dez went out, so did their offense. When Tony went out, so did their offense. This year, that's not the case. They're playing much better.
Terrific rushing performance by Ezekiel Elliott, but now there may be challenges going forward. Lael Collins, who tried to avoid having surgery on his right big toe in the offseason, hoping that it might be able to be something he can play through, was not able to do that. Now he has going to have surgery there. He's going to be on the injured list. He's going to miss 8 weeks and maybe as much as the entire season. This isn't the only injury on that Dallas line. Now, they're deep. Are they that deep? How does this change things for both Elliott and Prescott?
Well, I don't know that it does immediately because Ron Leary's there. And, you know, Leary's played really well the last 2 weeks. And I'll be honest, the running game has been far better these last 2 weeks. Not to say that Leary's better than Collins, but certainly he is better right now for this offensive line. The problem becomes when somebody else gets hurt. Collins, you know, he could play tackle. He could play guard. I'm not sure that Ron Leary is going to be moving over to those positions if somebody else gets hurt. Now, if Leary gets hurt, then it becomes another problem because now you need to fill that guard spot. And they're pretty thin on the offensive line. So in the short term, it's not going to make a difference, I don't think. It's if somebody gets hurt and they need to find a replacement.
Looking at the defense here as well, now they get DeMarcus Lawrence is going to come back from suspension. Now, you know, he may not be absolutely ready for game shape. So how much of an impact do you think he makes on this team? How quickly do you think he makes it?
Well, I think once he gets back into game shape, it makes a pretty big difference. Right now, I don't know how in shape he is. We've seen this with Greg Hardy when he came in here. You know, he had bursts in the first half, but he really disappeared in the second half of games because, you know, quite frankly, he wasn't in game shape. And, you know, that happens to a lot of guys who come on suspension. You know, Tom Brady's one thing. He's quarterback. But when you have to rush up the field every down, finding the game shape really becomes problematic. And, you know, when you're on suspension, you are persona non grata around that organization. You can't, you know, you can't use the facilities to work out. You can't practice with the team. You can't watch film. So no contact. So it's really incumbent on you to stay in shape. And I hope he did. And I hope he was able to lay off some of the drug issues that he had in the past. But, you know, that becomes the biggest concern for them.
Well, with all due respect to Kirk Cousins, it's been a few weeks since the Cowboys have seen a top-tier quarterback, but they will see one coming up next when they face Andy Dalton, and it's their very explosive passing game. You know, you have a terrific receiver out there in A.J. Green, and it sounds like Tyler Eifert, who's been the missing piece to the Bengals puzzle, will be back in action. So a different challenge for the Cowboys. They get them at home. How do you think they respond to this team, a team that's been in the playoffs for each of the last five seasons?
You know, this is going to be a really good matchup, especially in the fronts right there for both sides. Offensive line for the Cowboys, defensive line for the Bengals. That's going to be a matchup that a football junkie really wants to see, a great scouting type game. The one thing to keep an eye on, Morris Claiborne hasn't really seen a top-flight wide receiver. Odell Beckham, Orlando Scandrick drew him in week one, and he was there for then. Now he's been hurt. So we'll see if Morris Claiborne can deal with A.J. Griffin, who's, if not the best wide receiver in the NFL, top two or three. So that's going to be the toughest part for this team. They need to find a way to get to Andy Dalton. They don't have much of a pass rush. If the Cowboys' O-line can keep the Bengals D-line off Prescott, you know, I think we can expect another 18 to 27 points from Dak in the Cowboy offense, especially with this running game.
Well, obviously the story that's on everybody's lips here, Dak Prescott now 130 plus pass attempts, 21 players have done that. He's the only one that hasn't thrown a pick, but all the word is that when Tony Romo is healthy, that job is going to be his no matter what Prescott continues to do. Is that the right choice, or should the Cowboys maybe be playing this out as they get younger at these quote-unquote skill positions?
I think, personally, they should play it out and see what happens. Look, if the team is 5-1 and they just beat Cincinnati and Green Bay on the road, I don't know how you take Dak Prescott out, especially if he hasn't thrown an interception. I mean, that's a tough thing to do. Now, Jason Garrett is close with Tony Romo. They go on trips together. They go to sporting events together. I'm not sure that he's going to be the one that wants to tell Tony, hey, I'm going to have to bench you. Maybe a difficult thing for him to do, but they may have to do it. But this team is committed to Tony. Jerry Jones has told me on my show it is Tony Romo's job when he returns. And Jerry calls the shots. Let's be real about that one, especially with the high-dollar guys. So it's Tony's team. Whether it should or not, that doesn't really matter to the Cowboys because they're going to do what they want to do.
Well, if it wasn't drama, then it wouldn't really be the Cowboys. And RJ Choppy stays on top of that at 105.3 in Dallas for you as much as anybody else. So make sure you listen when you're in Big D, and when you're not, follow him on Twitter at RJ Choppy. Thanks so much for the time today. It's always fascinating in Big D, isn't it?
Absolutely. No problem, man. Anytime.
Thanks again. RJ Choppy, 105.3 in Dallas. And up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is, and most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it, and if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night, as we watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact that because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia's for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. That they lead the league in third down conversions, and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they could do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mixed things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0.
which of these are contenders and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple of weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having 9 turnovers, 9 interceptions in the last 2 games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beat down by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panther team. And to win the way they did with Matt Ryan having a record year, he's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right. It's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember now, they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. And that's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. What do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town, into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. The tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so then when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it. Most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. And then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills, who they just lost to. So they're going to be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that needs some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggests that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds, but my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? Or are we in here to win football games? Well, I think most teams would say, maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
Coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other because a lot of it is so silly. So I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian Waltzatulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, you know, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones, his 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was. Then Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at @SDrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.